Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to our podcast,
Life After the Letters. I'm Amelie.
And I'm Suba.
We're friends that met whilst working our first shifts as junior doctors.
And we're here to talk about the stories and challenges that we face every day.
Hello, hello.
Hey, everyone. You can hear the heat in our voices because it's so boiling right now.
I literally
can't even move from the position I'm in right now. What about you, Suba?
I feel like so many parts of my body are sweating simultaneously, and
including that top lip.
Most of all the top lip.
I'm joking. But the weather's been gorgeous in London particularly. So my friend came down from Manchester to London and she was saying how hot it is in London. So it was like even more clarification that we live in a isolated,
you know, what
utopia of heat in London
it's
right now.
It's throwback to geography days about like how urban areas are a lot hotter because the tarmac like retains the heat or something.
Oh, really?
And then like reflects
but then
it.
Manchester's also definitely an urban area.
I think it's something to do with like the pollution as well. So the pollution creates like this insulation and then the heat just bounces between the tarmac and the pollution. It's just like,
so we're kind of just
so we're trapped in like a heat bubble
of smog.
Yeah,
great word.
Yeah, there we go. That's what
so
that's
we've been asking our listeners,
yes,
and the people who follow us on Instagram to contribute to this week's episode, which I'm so excited to do.
So excited.
Do you want to introduce it?
Yeah, so today we're going to be talking about top tips for F1s and like our reflections on advice that we wish that we'd received or what you would tell yourself if you could go back in time.
Yep.
And answering some specific questions that have been thrown in by some of you guys out there. Really exciting episode and also really nostalgic as we come to the end of
totally.
Our foundation
I
years.
Think I've become really reflective over the past couple of weeks just about what F1, F2 has shown me and kind of where I want to go next. And even though I'm not like completely sure and I don't have a specific goal, I'm just really excited to try new things and finish this training malarky.
For sure. I think, I say
malarky. I barely even started.
I was going to say, you say finish. Like, this is the beginning.
Finish random rotations. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, get stuck into like your actual training post in the future. But no, totally. I feel like over the last week, even at work, every time I do something, I literally feel like a flashback to what this would have, like, you know, to like the first week of F1 and how shocking the growth
exactly.
is. I mean, I don't think when I started F1, I ever would have thought that at the end of F2, even at the start of F2, did I think that at the end of F2,
really? Okay.
I would be this, like, as confident and as comfortable I am, like, currently in my job role. But also bearing in mind how far we have to go. It's just...
Yeah, it's a journey. It's cool. Yeah. I remember when you start off medicine, everyone keeps talking about this, like, lifelong career, lifelong learning. As in, like, those buzzwords that just follow you throughout med school.
That you definitely dropped in your med school interview and you're like, I just can't wait to
for
commence.
For this lifelong learning. But it's completely true because... Yeah. It's a career that, yes, it provides us with a job title, but we actually have no idea where we're going to end up because it can encompass so many different interests and different specialties and just a lot of different things might happen over the next couple of years that we just have no idea are going to happen. I'm excited, basically.
yeah, it's cool. It's fun.
Yeah. So I just wanted to say thank you to the people who contributed questions.
Mm.
So quite a few of my family friends did, actually. And like a lot of younger girls that I've had in my family friendship circles for years.
Cute.
So I want to say thank you to Ehi for contributing. Also, another girl that I used to run with in my run club called Judith. She contributed some questions. She's also a medical student. And also some of our listeners. Katie also contributed some questions. And I'm so sorry if I've forgotten the rest of the names, but quite a few people just dropped some questions about F1.
Yeah.
And also F2 as well, but I suppose we'll come to them.
Yeah.
Cool.
So, yeah, super exciting. Also, I feel like we can't do this podcast without talking about the recent...
festival we went to.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so... we went to this festival last week, and it was almost like a medical conference. Only like
only the topic of creatives,
exactly. But and the topic of conversation was podcasts, how to monetize from podcasts, how to reach your audience. Is it even worthwhile? And just to sit down and like chat to people who are doing the same thing was really cool.
Yeah, definitely.
How did you find it?
Yeah, I thought it was just really interesting to meet other people that podcast, because I don't know anyone else that does other than like.
Do you not really?
Like on a like people that I've met in real life, do you know, whereas you have friends that do it, whereas I don't really as much. So it's been really nice to meet other people that do it and kind of understand the process, and sometimes how crazy and weird it is that we just sit down with a microphone and talk about things and people somehow want to listen to it. And it's...
and it was interesting because it was four women and there were like 95% of women there.
Yeah.
And a lot of people were talking about imposter syndrome, as we do anyway when women get together, but people also just talking about having the right to grab a microphone and just chat into it.
Yeah.
So it was really nice to know that other people feel kind of the same reservations that we had, but also still feel confident to keep going and pushing their voice forward, because actually stories like ours, which are very similar to our friends, that are just not shared very much. So it's nice to be able to do this and feel validated in doing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dope, dope conference.
Yeah, it was a great experience, for sure.
And you came a little bit later on. Do you feel like you got a lot of the vibes from the conference? Or
Yeah, I think so. I think I did for sure, because I only got to attend, like, two talks, I suppose. They were, like, live shows type things. And I think I still got a feeling for, like, just, I don't know, just it was just really inspiring to hear from these women talking about what it was like for them to, like, take off from this platform, and like you said, just feel validated in what you do, because you're kind of in an environment where other people are also doing the same thing.
Exactly, because it's funny, when you go to work, people kind of side-eye you a little bit when you say that you do a podcast, and I'm sure there's lots of people in my workplace that have definitely listened to our show but just haven't told me, or are kind of like side-eyeing me and being like, Amelie, what is it that you really know to add to the conversation? Yet they just don't say anything in real life. So it was just really good to sit down with people who get what you're doing and also understand that struggle of putting yourself out there and allowing people to have an opinion on you.
Yeah, because I feel like anyone who puts himself out there in any way, shape or form always gets that kind of like anxiety in a way of like, what am I doing? And, you know, that kind of fear of like this weird double life where... we get out here, we're so verbose with this microphone. And then at work, anytime like it comes up that, you know, we do this podcast, I always feel like a bit shy. And I'm like, because I don't want to come across like, oh, it's so fantastic. Yes,
so let me tell you about the state of the NHS.
Yeah, like grab the intercom phone and stuff. You know. But yeah, it was nice to just be in like an environment of like-minded people.
Yeah, and it also helps you level what you're doing. It was funny because we were trying to schmooze the room, work the room, and this lady was giving us all these tips, telling us what to do. She was like, here's my card, and she was like, can I have yours? And me and Sue were like, scratching our heads. So we don't have those yet.
Yeah.
So that was even good to even know that we need...
We need a card.
And there's a few more things that we need to do.
Yeah.
But it was cool, and it was nice to think about our show a little bit more, and with a bit more intention.
I think that's another really good thing. We kind of got to take stock of where Life After the Letters is and where we can go, what we need to do, what, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So let's get back to the questions.
But we digress, yeah. So back to our questions.
If you say digress one more time,
Suba. This is the first time I've said it in today's episode.
Yeah, because, 8 minutes in? Can we all applaud Suba, please?
Thank you.
So, basically, I wrote down all the questions and I put them in a cup. And what we'll do, we'll just pick up a question each, ask the other one, and then we'll probably comment on it. So do you want to go first? There you go.
So
drum roll, please.
Right. Okay, first question for you, Dr. Inusa.
Lol.
Have I ever called you that?
No. I think he was there that for my dad.
Yeah, genuinely, that is the original, the OG Dr. Inusa. Right. Was the medical student to doctor sort of transition a massive jump for you?
Ooh, good question.
Yes. Thank you to whoever put that one in.
I'm going to say yes and no, just because... Why? I really enjoyed that transition and I was like really looking forward to it, because obviously as a medical student you have some sort of knowledge, but it's really difficult to even understand what you're doing if you can't apply that knowledge. So, and I absolutely loved my like final year prep for practice
placement.
Whoa, too much alliteration.
I mean, I had to say that about three times to get it out in one sentence.
And I was just like really keen to get started. So I quite enjoyed that transition and I didn't feel like it was a massive jump. I suppose the reason I said yes and no to that was because it's just completely different from what that you do as a medical student.
Yeah.
Instead of you supporting the team,
yeah,
you are the team and you are leading the team.
Yeah.
And that's what makes a good F1. What makes a good F1 is the person who does the admin role and takes pride in their administrative skills, isn't it?
Yeah.
What were you going to say, sorry?
I was going to say, I remember even at the start of F1, you talking about your final year placement.
Oh, really?
And yeah, and how like... because I feel like we had really maybe contrasting experiences, because you had a really good, like, you were really immersed in the team. Like, you were there most mornings or, like, most days. I felt like you were basically really kind of, like, at one with your F1 at the time.
And my F1 was brilliant. Yeah,
you really did kind of, like, do a lot of the stuff that you then went on to do as an F1.
Yeah, because I was writing discharge letters. Yeah. I was prepping the ward round. I was adding blood to the list. I even, like, went to go and, like, certify some deaths as well.
Yeah,
so it's just, like, really good placement.
Yeah. Whereas, for me, in final year, I think I wasn't as immersed in the ward round. And maybe that was because at my med school, we didn't really have, like, a prep for practice type block.
Okay.
Because yours was, like, a post-exam block, I'm assuming. Mm-hmm. So you'd already passed finals. Everything was sorted. You weren't stressing about anything. You were just there to, like... learn what to do when F1 did.
So it's quite fun, actually.
Yeah, which is great.
It's so, like, fun without the pressure.
Yeah, whereas we didn't have that. So we finished after exams, we didn't have anything else. So I think during the times when I was on the wards, it was a lot more like, where are my gaps in my learning? You know, practicing for OSCEs, preparing for
can I just pass finals?
Yeah, that was, which kind of made it maybe a bit different for me. Maybe the jump was a bit more of an actual, like, it was more like a cliff face.
Yeah, like a running start and then like hurdle.
When I say a jump, it was more like a cliff dive. Like, I just fell into the abyss. So.
And how about in the practice block that we had before F1 started? How did you find that in the hospital?
Even that, I mean, also, I guess it's very different because you started on, medicine.
A medical ward, yeah.
Yeah, whereas I started on psychiatry.
Okay.
So again, I think that for me it was, I mean, I say it was a cliff drive. Maybe it was more like a sort of gradual slope, to be honest, because I kind of entered into like the paddling pool of psychiatry and then I got upgraded into like the deep end in medicine and then I like came to the shallow end for surgery.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, or I don't know, maybe that could be.
No, shallow end.
Yeah. So, even my shadowing week, like the first week of induction was kind of like...
Did you enjoy it or was it just like meh?
I just felt stressed by it, to be honest. Okay. I feel like because we had a lot of induction-y teaching sessions, remember? I feel like we maybe had like an afternoon, two afternoons and then one full day of shadowing.
Yeah.
And I remember feeling like...
Basically, we didn't have long to actually get on the ward, did we?
Yeah. And then when you would go on the ward, say if you went on in the afternoon, you know, the F1 that you're shadowing might be like, oh, there's actually nothing to do.
Yeah.
So, you know, you may not make much progress. But the one day I did spend shadowing, I just remember feeling stressed because I remember my F1 took me on a tour around the whole hospital, showed me, like, this is X-ray. Okay, and then you come through there, and that's where the radiologist sits. And this is where you go to the lab to drop off the add-on blood and, oh, you know, whatever. And this is where you go to do this. And I just remember being, like, so disorientated.
Oh, and that hospital is massive.
Trying to retain, like, all this info. And the F1 being like, so you need to come in. This is how you put in the list. This is how you do that. And me just being like... information overload. Yeah.
And you're like, I don't even remember my login, mate.
Yeah. And I'm literally there like, so wait, what's the route from the accommodation to the hospital? Because I don't even know that one.
What was the code for the outside door into the hospital again?
Literally, and you're just writing down so many things, you know, scribbling things down. And yeah. I mean, at the end of the day...
But you survived and you did
do.
It.
You just come in on your first day.
And I think the other good thing to remember, sorry to interrupt, the other good thing to remember is that you do have a whole group of 40 other people who are in exactly the same place as you.
Yeah.
And even though some people might be appearing to be more confident than the other person... Actually, we're all starting from a place of nothing and we don't know anything.
Yeah.
And it's a good time to ask questions to your team and just be that annoying person who keeps asking questions so that you can be supported. But I think that comes easier for others than it does. So even though the job is very different as a medical student to being a doctor, I thought that the jump was manageable, personally.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that at the end of the day, you'll never know what it's like to do the job until you just do the job.
Yeah.
But once you do the job, like, you will be able to, like, you will be fine. You can do the job.
And, babe, can I just say, the job also in F1 isn't that hard. You don't know that much as at F1 and no one expects you to know that much.
To.
What they expect you to do is be safe and ask seniors for help. Yeah. And you'll be lucky if you were like me and you started off in medicine and you have supportive seniors. I do know for some people who started off in like busy surgical jobs that they really struggled because they didn't have the senior support like I did.
Yeah.
So actually, if I started off in surgery, I bet my answer would be completely different.
Yeah, you know? I guess it so depends on what job you start in. Yeah. But at the end of the day, I think you've got to remember that what you do is all that you can be held responsible for.
Yeah.
So... just always be conscious of that and you have to just be tenacious sometimes. Like, just if you feel that this is wrong and you need support, you just need to keep asking until you receive it.
Yeah. Because no one's actually that annoyed, even though they pretend to be annoyed. No. They'll be happier that you ask them for help early on.
Absolutely.
And it's their responsibility, not yours.
Yeah.
Cool. Next question. Yes.
We could talk forever about
this. I'm like looking at the time, I'm like, oh my gosh, we need to rush through this. So this goes into a nice question for you, Suba.
Okay.
Were you well supported starting F1?
So, I started on psychiatry, so obviously it was very different, wasn't it? Because I wasn't making medical choices. Psychiatry generally is very senior led, so your consultant will make most of the big decisions.
Okay.
And then there was always generally like a reg or a consultant around or accessible. So I started on psychiatry. So obviously it was like really different because a lot of the big decisions are senior led. You didn't generally have like physically unwell patients. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't necessarily being like called to assess sickies in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I was supported. Like me and my consultant got on really well. So that was really nice.
So you had someone more senior to you that was in between you and the consultant?
I had a registrar. I also had a CT1.
Okay.
So I had a lot of support, to be honest.
Did you find them helpful for medical things?
For this, I would say I think sometimes with psychiatry, they feel bound by, I think it's the legalities of the registration that they have.
Okay.
And even their the indemnity.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't necessarily always liable for like making medical decisions.
Yeah.
Which is why, you know, psychiatrists tend to have a low threshold for medical, to get a medical opinion from a medical team.
Yeah.
So I did find that frustrating sometimes. And I feel like there was definitely a story. Do you remember this? Where I kind of became high-key the laughing stock of the hospital when I had to call...
Oh, my God!
You remember this?
I do, because this? I feel like I told
you in the car, I think.
I told you the story, I think, and you were like, that was me!
Yeah. So I had... we had done, some routine bloods on a patient who'd come in, and the phosphate was, two decimal points below the normal range. And I sort of spoke about it with my reg, and I was like, oh, I was just checking the bloods and I noticed this, and like, I don't think it's necessarily anything worrying, blah, 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 should we even replace it? And my registrar, who, you know what, he must have known he was shafting me in this moment.
What an idiot, sorry.
In this moment of his life, he must have known, like, he was shafting, maybe he had a giggle to himself, I don't know. Anyways, he was like to me.
Maybe that was like your, what is it called? When they're hazing.
Yeah.
You got hazed.
Welcome to psychiatry. Yeah, so he was like, basically call the Medreg up and just get a medical opinion on it. And I was like, I felt like a mug. And I was like, I think this is so unnecessary. But I was like, you know what? What can you do? Like, your senior doctor's giving you like, a specific
and it's telling you, okay, super. Phosphates, a tiny little bit, smidgen low. Maybe in another hospital, this will be a normal range, but okay, yeah. Super, I'm going to give you this job.
So then I call up the Medreg, you know, to be like, oh, hey, this is really maybe a stupid question, but I spoke to my Reg and he just asked me to get an opinion from you. The phosphate is this. And there was like a pause. And then I'm kind of like, hello? And the Medreg is basically like, what? And I was just like, I thought maybe he didn't hear me. I can repeat myself. And he's literally like astounded. And he's like, that is literally insignificant. And he was like, if you really want to replace it, you can replace it with, like, Orval phosphate. And I was like, okay. And I was like, what's the name of the Orval phosphate? And then on Amelie's side, so Amelie comes home that night, because obviously we were housemates. She comes home that night and she's like, oh, guys, can you believe? And she starts telling me the story.
Can you believe? It was so funny. But you know what's also funny? I was also doing a gastro job at that time. So I just used to replace loads of people's salt levels and electrolytes all the time.
Yeah.
So if it was a low phosphate, I was seeing low phosphates of like 0.6, 0.4.
Yeah.
And I was replacing that with IVs, even replacing other stuff with oral, barely even rechecking bloods later on. So for me, it was actually part of my normal at this point.
Yeah.
But had I been super on day one,
you'd
and
been
by myself without a senior to be like, yes, so give Sandofos one tablet BD.
Is it
even a tablet? Is it a sachet? Who knows?
Yeah, it's a tablet. I think it's a tablet. I don't know.
When patients ask me, oh, so doctor, what's that red pill? I'm like, I don't know. I only know like one colour of a pill and that's Viagra. Do you know what I mean? Not from personal experience. Woo!
Sure.
Disclaimer.
Sure.
Just because I watch
movies.
We all learn
a lot about Amelie today. Wow. Okay. But that I think actually what you said is really interesting because I actually felt like kind of insecure about the fact that starting on a psych job, I felt like everyone else, like all the other F1s I knew, were like real doctors sometimes
and
in
new
some
stuff.
Ways.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, I felt like I was behind and I felt stressed about like having to catch up when I then started on my medical job.
Can I ask you another question? So when you were, obviously you had two other F1s at that time.
Yeah.
Did you guys like have this shared feeling together or did you actually think, oh no, look, we're all on the same page, that's fine?
No, I think we were all kind of stressed about it.
Stressed about what?
About like when we would start our actual like medical or surgical jobs and then being asked to flex that like medical and like, you know, that brain of like medicine that actually was lying dormant a lot of the time in psychiatry, which kind of we would talk about it and be like, are we forgetting things? Are we going to, do you know what I mean? Are we going to be really rusty when we start? And then also when you then have group conversations and people will be talking about all the things they're doing.
Yeah.
And I would be like, that's unimaginable to me to be like managing a patient in septic shock or something like that.
Yeah.
Was to me like, oh my God.
Even though now you could do that with your eyes closed.
Exactly. And I think for those that start in psychiatry, like don't be deterred. Like you will gain those skills when you then start those jobs. Like,
and take your skills from psychiatry because
focus on that.
Because in psychiatry, you learn so much. You learn how to speak to patients, how to be put in situations that you never would even dream of being put in.
Yeah.
And how to live and sit in being uncomfortable in conversations or being, like, fearful of different scenarios. And also, prioritising medical problems or knowing when to escalate them.
Yeah.
That's also a really useful skill. So psychiatry, you learn loads.
It's a whole different kettle of fish. And you're
and
so
you
right.
can drink coffee and you can drink tea and eat
sit
biscuits.
Sit down during your ward round. I'm sorry.
Sit down.
Do you remember those days?
Can I just say, going from psychiatry to A&E in F2, that was such a shock because I was standing up all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Like, I had to wear trainers. Yeah. I was so shook.
Yeah, for sure.
Gosh.
For sure.
Just different pace, a different life, isn't it?
Right.
Cool, who's the next
numero
question?
For me, I think, for me to read to you.
From me
for
to
me
you?
From me to you to me.
We are actually the Chuckle Brothers.
Okay, so
Amylate. What are your tips for maintaining a good work-life balance?
Oh, interesting.
This is a good one for you. I think you do a good job of this.
I think people think I do a good job of it. And I find it hilarious.
So you do a good job of maintaining an illusion of maintaining a good work-life balance.
Yes, tell them. That's like millennial skills. Basically.
Make it till you make it, baby.
Exactly. And show on social media. So, no, to be honest, I think I've always kind of maintained a good work-life balance, maybe sometimes geared towards life more than work. And I suppose that's like an issue that I have struggled with, like throughout med school, where I have like so many different things in my head at the time that I kind of spend a bit too much time on the life bit than the work bit. But I think if you really enjoy your job, that the work bit will come easily.
Naturally, yeah.
So that was good for me because I did enjoy my jobs and I still do. But in terms of maintaining the life balance, I think it's important to make sure that you spend time outside of work working on your natural interests and also spend time looking after yourself. So for me, it was important to go to the gym and go to the classes, even in London, because we were working in Essex at the time, but I used to sometimes get on the train to London to do like a class or two or meet up with friends in London as well. Because actually, when you're working in F1, one really good thing about it is that you get to know all your F1 colleagues very well.
Yeah.
But the other issue is that sometimes you're just surrounded by medicine all the time.
Yeah.
Because naturally, and most likely, you would have been in a place away from home and you're amongst just doctors.
Yeah.
I made it a point to go and see my friends in London and go to events in London as well. So I think that's important. Also, I think eating well is another important part. And I also like cooking. So I would like cook for myself in the evenings. And that was like just a good time to like wind down and eat healthy food. Because actually it's so easy. Like first time you make money.
Yeah.
And also you don't really have much time. It's really easy just to like order a takeaway, isn't it?
Or chips and beans. Like, you know, it's just your life.
Ongoing chips and beans scenario.
No, genuinely. Or just like, you know, that vending machine life. Like, it's really easy to eat unhealthily as a doctor.
Yeah, exactly. And particularly when you're working like really bad shifts.
Yeah.
So I suppose like when I was working my first medical job, I think I wasn't eating as well just because I lived in hospital accommodation. We all did for like about a month or so.
And that kitchen was
horrific. Disgusting and horrific.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even want to put stuff in the fridge.
It was unsanitary.
Yeah.
It was unsanitary.
I think the most I did was have like a yogurt container that was like sealed and put in a carrier bag so it wouldn't even touch the fridge.
I always have my food inside a carrier bag. Like my mum would make me food, like I'd have rice and curry in like Tupperware boxes inside carrier bags, like she would double bag it.
Exactly, because I didn't want it touching the fridge. My mum felt so bad for me. And then I would put that inside the microwave, which also scared me a little bit.
Oh god, that microwave.
So I'd eat that way or you just get a takeaway. So I didn't do well in my like in the first month or so, but as soon as we got our beautiful house.
Oh, I miss it.
I know. It was so good.
I wish we could just pick it up and bring it to London and like place it.
Well, and not let the prices rise either.
No, exactly.
For the same, how much a month were we paying? About 400?
400 a month, mate. That is a madness.
That is mad.
Yeah.
In London, £400 a month would be like a garden shed.
Yeah, it would get you a shoebox. Cupboard under the stairs, mate. Bring your own sleeping bag.
Yeah.
Unfurnished.
That's so sad. But that's so true.
Yeah.
And I think also, like, living with you guys was also a massive help in terms of, like, maintaining that work-life balance, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I think you did a really good job of, like, I think you're right about the whole, if you are in the fringes of London, like, making an effort to maybe sort of, like, travel out from your bubble.
Yeah.
Because like you said, actually, if you've all moved to a place for work, you're network kind of just becomes other doctors. And it's not like, so a lot of my friendship group are like my friends, like home friends and school friends are all doctors,
but you're connected in different ways.
Yeah, but we weren't like, we have a friendship preceding medicine, whereas actually I think a lot of your doctor friends, initially what connects you is the fact that you work together, so it's so easy just for your conversations to be about work.
And imagine like, if our life was this podcast the entire time, you'd get so sick of it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I mean, by the end of our year of being, you know, of like being friends with all our colleagues, I think it was funny because I remember one of our friends used to always be like, no one's allowed to talk about work. And we would all inevitably end up talking about work because sometimes it was like the main thing that connected all of us.
Yeah,
but
totally.
By the end of it, when you've actually formed genuine friendships.
Is that me?
It wasn't you.
Oh, okay, I felt
it was
like
Rini.
That was me.
Shout out to Rini. but by the end of the year, it became a case of like, I remember once we were in a conversation and like, we didn't speak about work at all. And I was like,
Guys. It's happened. We're real friends now.
That's so funny, isn't
it? But yeah, working, I think at the end of the day, if it's a priority for you to maintain your work-life balance, and by that, I think, like you said, what you really mean is like maintaining your life outside of work. Mm-hmm. If that's a priority for you, then you'll do it. Like, just make sure that you make the time to do the things that you love because they nourish and feed your soul.
Yeah.
And you'll be happier for it overall. You don't have to feel... And likewise, if you're feeling like, you know what, you're exhausted and you're stretching yourself a bit too much, just take an off day, chill out,
mm-hmm.
don't do anything, recharge.
Yeah.
And then you'll just, you know, it'll happen in its own time.
Exactly. And I always used to do a thing where instead of taking like all my annual leave at once, I would like take a good block off. So I had like a couple of weeks off to go on a good holiday somewhere.
Yeah.
But I'd also like take random days off in the week just to kind of spread my time out a little bit. Because actually it is hard going to work. We're not just going to work 9 to 5. We're going 9 to 5 plus maybe a couple of hours every week. Either on calls or just, like, staying late every day. Because you do inevitably.
Just staying late, yeah.
Inevitably, as an F1, in our hospital, we used to stay late all the time.
Yeah.
And that was just, like, a natural part. You could just do 9 to 9 every single day.
I think that's another thing that's important is
that's tiring.
You need to take care of yourself when it comes to your work shifts. Because you could... Like, I think there was one day where I think I ended up staying... So, I was, you know, the hours were meant to be 8 till 4:30 on a medical job.
Oh yeah, it was.
And then, but you never left at 4:30. But there was a day when I think, and I used to generally leave at 5:30, and I just was used to that. That for me became my new normal working hours. Mm-hmm. And if I had to stay until 6, I'd be a bit like, oh, okay, I'm annoyed. Because also, these are days where you're always trying hard to leave on time. So you are working at like breakneck speed.
And you've probably taken about a 15-minute break to eat lunch.
Yeah, eat your lunch at the desk whilst updating the list with one hand.
Mm.
But I remember one day I ended up staying until 7 because just like things were just snowballing. And then once it got to 7, I just kind of like, it's like a switch went off in me. And I was like, I just didn't care anymore. And I felt like, actually, I ended up leaving at 8.
Mm.
And it got to the point where I was like, I easily could have stayed in that place until 10 because there's just so many things. You keep happening, you can keep going. You know,
was that the gastro job?
Yeah.
Yeah, because we worked on the same ward, obviously, at different times.
Yeah.
But that was a hard job, and it was such a slog. Yeah, that's what
you've
I can
just
really
got
say
to, I
it.
Think, have a cut off where you're like, there's only so much you can do, and you've got to do the necessary things.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just have to be like, can this wait till tomorrow? Yes. Okay, let's go.
And you don't have to make that decision yourself. I think it's important to, now looking back, to ask your seniors where exactly you can start looking at to save some time.
Yeah.
Because like now, if an F1 asks me, I'm late, how do I not leave late every single day?
Yeah.
I would take that upon myself to make sure I better spread out the jobs as a team.
Yeah.
Explain what our priorities, what we need to do today and what we can leave till tomorrow.
Yeah.
And what actually won't make a difference to the patients, like length of stay or care in hospital.
This is very true. We can say that with hindsight now.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely. Yeah. There's no way I would have approached my jobs in the same way as an F2 as I did as an F1. But that also comes with learning, doesn't it?
Yeah. I want to have one last point on this work-life balance thing, because I will say that I've only mastered it in F2. And I've only really, truly mastered it in my last rotation of F2.
Really?
And for me, what it's come down to is realising that I really needed a work-life balance and then prioritising it. And that was it. I think once I prioritised it and I was like, I am going to promise myself that I will do this. And
what changed for you to make you think you need a work-life balance?
For me, I think it was my second job on F2.
Which was
AMU, acute medicine.
Okay.
It went out the window. All I did was work. And I didn't even, you know, sometimes you can't see it when you're going through it, but I was like in a bit of a funk because I was just working all.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
The time, and it was like during the winter as well. And it was just so easy to just be stuck at work, and then you come home, you're exhausted, you don't do anything because you're exhausted, and you get back to work, and then you reflect back on the month and you're like, oh, all I've done this month is work. And I wasn't happy with it. So when I started A&E, I was like, you know what, I refuse to let my rotation dictate like my social life, and I'm going to maintain it. Because I needed to, and I think actually I was so much happier for it. Because I got to the point at the end of AMU, I was like, how much have I seen my friends like this month? And I was like, oh, during that rotation, I was like, this is crazy, it's not enough.
Yeah.
But once you prioritise it, then, you know, you're happier for it. So yeah, I think that's all it took, was just that shift.
Yeah, and even though I kept talking about like going into London, it was just because where we were living for our first year, it just wasn't very exciting. There wasn't very much to do there. Yeah. So I kind of had to push myself to go a little bit further. But yeah. I felt so much better for it.
Yeah.
So much better for it. Okay, next question.
Yeah.
I suppose this is kind of the same thing, but I would be interested to hear it from you, Suba. How easy is it for you, or how easy was it for you to maintain other interests during F1? And what interests did you have, like, before med school and, before F1, and what interests are you kind of, like, pursuing now?
Okay, so, I don't know, I feel like this one's kind of hard to answer for me, because I think the sort of, a lot of the interests that I had outside of medicine kind of naturally, like, I naturally kind of, my interest in them kind of tailed off a bit. So I would say, like, music, for instance, like...
Well, like,
guitaring. I feel like in the last few years of med school, I was very actively doing it. Like, I was performing, I would do shows. Me and my friend who plays the piano, we were always getting together and jamming and, like, working on things, working on little projects. Yeah. We had, like, a plan to start, you know, doing this in a bit more
makes
like
a
professional way.
In that sense.
Yeah, but then actually that naturally tailed off in final year of med school.
Yeah.
And I'm like...
Because your priorities change, though, in final year, don't they? Because you need to pass your exams.
Yeah, and I think actually in a lot of ways that kind of detracted... Yeah, I think I kind of like lost a bit of myself in that time. So I kind of lost this part of myself that had all these interests. It was really weird. Yeah. And even things like...
It almost feels like you're trying to grab at your identity again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it kind of... But it's reformed now, because now... I don't know, your job kind of changes you.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I kind of, it was, yeah, it's hard for me to answer that one, because I kind of went into F1 having lost a lot of things about my identity.
Yeah.
And I kind of...
Ooh, that was deep.
I know. But I feel like at the end of F2, I've come out now with like new parts of myself that I've rediscovered.
Definitely. And I think you going to New Zealand will only make that...
More in the forefront of...
Totally.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I'm hoping it
because
will do.
Going to New Zealand, you can only succeed. You can only grab onto your interests more and who you are more. Whereas, like, actually being staying here in an environment that you've always been in, it doesn't always encourage that.
Yeah. So, totally. Like, in a way, it kind of strips away the things that kind of...
Make you comfortable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, and forces you to really stare at yourself.
Yeah.
And... Yeah, I don't know why these questions are, like, meant to be advice for you guys. I feel like this is, like, a therapy session for me.
Oh, my gosh,
what is going on?
It is. And but it's funny you should say about the projects. I think that's really important because, actually, it's all good and well to say, I'm going to stay fit, I'm going to stay healthy, I'm going to eat well, I'm going to look after myself, light some candles every day. But, actually, unless you're intentional about the things you do, it won't happen because there's not enough time or room for these things to happen naturally.
Yeah.
So I know this sounds crazy, but I signed up to... London Marathon.
Yeah.
And that made me stay fit. Because there's no way I'm going to run 26 miles without training for it.
Yeah. And I was literally going to say that when you were saying about having projects, even when you're thinking about your own fitness. You need to have a focus, right?
Yeah. And it even allowed me to form new friendships. Like, I feel like I became closer to Hannah, for example, just because we were both running together, we were training together.
Yeah.
And even though she lived somewhere completely different, we were always, like, updating each other.
Yeah.
And it was something nice to talk about outside of work.
Yeah.
So I think stuff like that is important to kind of hook yourself into a project. Yeah. Or even, like, a few of our friends, they joined the gym together. Yeah. So little things like that are really helpful, aren't they?
Yeah, for sure. Or even at the start of F1, remember we had a cute little F1 running club?
Oh my gosh, yeah.
We did like two, three runs. Amelie was basically our chieftain. And we'd go on little jogs.
But we were so silly. Because I remember the first run about, 2K in, we just went to our friend's house. Yeah. And then we ate, like, we had a coffee and, like, had some biscuits. And the run just stopped.
That was it.
But it was fun. It was fun.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sad that tailed off, actually. Okay, next question for you. Okay, this one's kind of crazy. I don't know. Okay, well, I'll say it to you and then we can kind of discuss. How do you deal with 24-hour shifts?
I didn't understand that question and I can't remember who wrote that in.
Yeah.
But do you even know what that
means? This is not legal anymore.
Oh, okay, cool. I was like...
for that.
I was shooketh.
Maybe we could talk about maybe just like a long shift or like a night shift. But I'm sure that question will come up. So yeah, maybe...
Next.
Yeah.
And then we'll try and get to it if it doesn't come up.
Yeah.
Cool. You pick another
so
one.
So round two. Oh, okay. Did you feel lonely in F1? How do you make friends? I love that second question.
That's so cute.
Yeah.
That's so cute.
Start with the first one. So did you feel lonely in F1?
I think there's parts of the time in F1 when I definitely felt lonely.
Mm.
I think it's really easy sometimes to feel alone in your team. When you're the person with, like, the least knowledge, but also the biggest desire to get things done, it's kind of two really difficult things to reconcile.
Absolutely.
Because you don't want to feel like you're trying to push without the help of, like, your seniors or your other colleagues. So I think those kind of times I felt lonely. Also, there was, like, different parts of, like, my identity, which I couldn't, like, grab hold of because I didn't have, like, those natural communities around me. So whether it was, like... my Christian identity, so having like other Christians around me, people who I could like sit down and do like Bible studies with, I just didn't have that. I really struggled with that part, so that side of me felt a bit alone because at university it was so different. We had like a good community. You knew your life at university. You had like groups.
You had so many groups of
so
people.
Many so much time and like all of that, so that was difficult. But then also like running, to be honest, I ran so much at university. I had my university run club as well, and that was also like a really large part of like what I did.
Yeah.
So like just not having a group of people who would just come out with me, or I couldn't just like call on people, because who you are as a doctor compared to who you are as a medical student is very different. You're kind of like just a fish out of water, like a fish in a massive pond when you come into hospital. So I think just that adjustment to who I now was and like what my identity now was, that was kind of lonely, but that was just me trying to figure out myself.
Yeah. Okay, so with the whole being lonely thing, I agree with you, because I think in some ways yes, in some ways no. And I think I felt like you touched really interestingly on feeling lonely at work, even though I think because of the follow-up question in this pair, I think this sounds more like how was it making friends in your cohort of F1s?
Yeah, so can we stick to the lonely bit? Because I think that's probably more interesting.
But then I think what you touched on is more how actually within your job role you can feel a bit lonely because you've got kind of clashing agendas in a way. You've got maybe your surgical reg that wants to get to theatre, and there's you who maybe wants, you know, another, your agenda is maybe different and their agenda is different, and those two things coming together. Or even maybe sometimes having conflicts within your, like, your work relationships where you can have people that you are friends with, that you're now working with, and your working relationships can be strained, and you can feel lonely in that way.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we were lucky with our cohort of F1s.
Yeah, so lucky.
I already knew a few people from university, not super well, but
I didn't actually know anyone.
You didn't know anybody, but I knew I knew two of our other housemates I knew from uni, and I already thought well of them. So that was really nice. And then I knew your dad, of course. So I kind of knew you. But yeah, it was just, I felt that actually making friends was quite nice. Because also, as crazy as it sounds, like, I feel F1 is kind of like the first season of Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah, it is
like, you know, that
bit.
First episode where they're all like coming into work and like,
it's like, who are you?
Who are you? I don't know why you
use that voice. Lol, sorry. I remember I really hated Alex initially on Grey's Anatomy, but then I came to love him.
Yeah,
like the middle. and end.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you know what I mean? I feel like you kind of get all those characters. You get an Alex and you get a George and you get your Meredith, you get your Christina.
And you get a Christina Yang.
Yeah, your Izzy's. Like, yeah. You've got everybody. But actually, at the end of the day, the job is bonding enough. Like, even if you don't get on, you know, even if you, like, maybe this person isn't someone that you naturally would have clicked with, the fact that you are all going through the same hellfire, in a sense, like, you will bond through that.
Exactly.
And
so I think, it almost felt like a family, didn't
yeah,
it? Like
it
a
really
weird family
did.
Situation. Like,
even now, to think back, it, you remember, like, how much, if you don't know what to do, you just post it in the group, someone tells you, or, mm-hmm. you know.
What you should have done with the phosphate thing, yeah?
Yeah, I was just, basically, my God, I'm such a moron. Anyways, yeah, so I think it never, you, I don't think you will feel lonely, but that was a big fear for me before starting, actually.
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
we talked about this in another episode, mm-hmm, about mm-hmm. choosing our jobs, and for me, I was very much afraid of not making friends and feeling isolated. So yeah. I chose my location very specifically to be near my family and near my friends in case work didn't offer me that. But
it did,
yeah,
luckily.
I would say yes and no in different ways. And I think also sometimes it's hard when you make... In a way, the beauty of adult friendships is I think you become close very quickly. So I remember the person that I am, I don't think I open up, like, emotionally... emotionally I don't open up on, like, a deeper level very quickly with people.
Okay.
I'm very reserved in that sense, unless I get, like, a really really good vibe from someone and I trust them very much.
Yeah.
But usually it takes time for me to, like, see that I can trust you before I feel comfortable opening and sharing, like, my emotions with you. But I found that I went through, like a big thing quite early on in F1. But I found that I was really lucky to have you guys, like, as housemates, I felt really happy and comfortable to open up with and have, like, emotional support from, you know, all those people that were there, which normally I would have only have gone to my closest friends for.
Oh, yeah, same. I think same. And you know that. I had situations outside of work, but I could really turn to my work colleagues for support. And to be honest, I only turned to the ones that I was very close to. But it F1 definitely provided me that group of people. Who would be there for me.
Yeah.
And it's unlike a normal job. I say normal job, a job that's not medicine.
Yeah.
Where actually you might not be that tight with your colleagues because you're not relying on your colleagues for so much during the day. Because actually what we're relying on our colleagues for is to help support patients and, like, life and death scenarios.
Yeah.
So, like, the bond that we need to make is... It has to be stronger than you would in a, like, a regular admin job or IT kind of job.
Yeah.
So I suppose the nature of the environment that you're in... forces you to look at more human factors. So I'm sure that has some sort of, like, effect on us.
Yeah.
Cool. Let's rush through these questions. We might not be able to get through all of them, but I hope we do. Hardest part of F1?
Okay, so this will be a quick fire question. Hardest part of F1 was growing a backbone.
What?
I'll say that. Bloody hell, I've got a rigid... backbone now. Why does that sound?
And she just sat up straighter after she said that.
Because I feel that I went into F1 not being a confrontational person, not being someone that, like...
Ooh, and how that has changed.
You catch me fighting people left, right and centre. But I mean, in terms of, I went into F1 being maybe a bit more fearful of my seniors.
Yeah.
And I've come out of it feeling very much like, no, you know, I'll stand my ground. I know that I'm good at my job. My opinion is worthwhile.
Yeah.
I'll challenge my seniors if I feel they need to be challenged. I wouldn't have done that at the beginning.
Okay, yeah. And that's because your priority now is definitely your patients.
Yeah. How about you?
My hardest part of F1 was doing the things I needed to do on time. So, like, getting to work on time. also, like, do my portfolio on time. Yeah.
And you always catch Amelie.
Because I'm just really forgetful with time. Anyway, next question, please. Next.
Right, so... Is it possible to aspire... You are asking the right people. Is it possible to aspire towards non-medical endeavours as a junior doctor, such as starting a business? Amelie, this is a great question for you.
I would say, yes, it is possible to, like, work towards it and think about it. But to be honest, in F1, your priority is F1. In order for you to enjoy your F1 and feel like a human being and to have time to yourself, I think it's important to focus on, like, your F1 job and get out what you can from it. I think there's time to, like, pursue other endeavours, and I think you should do that whilst you're doing F1, but it's not going to be possible to give your whole heart to it, I think.
Yeah.
Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'd second that.
I've been able
that.
To do that more in F2, and definitely if I took a year out, and I know a lot of doctors who've taken time out even after F1, who are doing amazingly well. And I would just say, maybe just use your initial F1 just to become the best doctor you can be initially.
I think you make your kind of habits in F1, mm-hmm. and it's the best time to breed like the best habits for yourself.
Yeah.
In your sort of early days as a doctor.
Definitely.
So, yeah. So I guess sow the seeds, but focus on it maybe a bit later down
the line. Okay, super. Another quick fire question.
Mm.
What was your favourite job in F1 and tell me why?
I would say A&E.
That was F1, mate.
Yeah, sorry, no, that's crazy.
Oh, that's interesting you'd say that, but I think the same.
Okay, so in F1, I would say my last job, my surgical job, and I would say because, and maybe it's just the end of F1 vibes, because you're like...
Nah, mate, it's because Suma was chilling in her last job.
No, also because I think I had just, like, grown a lot by the end. I was more confident, I was like... I think I was, like, very much running my ward round.
Yeah, you
I was
were.
On top of everything.
So was I. Yeah.
We both had kind of got to that point where you were, like, admin level 100.
Yeah. And we'd be, like, to other teams, would you guys like any help with anything? But, we have finished.
But that's it, because between the two of us, we had about 6 pages. That's not a shout-out to our admin skills. No, that's a shout-out to breast and vascular.
Exactly.
But, you know, and I had a really good team. I learned a lot. I was starting to work independently. And yeah. My consultant used to always have a joke where he'd be like, you're a senior house officer. Like, do you know what I mean? And it, you know,
yeah, my consultant, my current one, he's always like, so, Amelie, the reason it's so easy is because you're on F2, but it's almost like you're a CMT. And he's like, it's my F1. It's almost like you're on F2. And he's so cute.
Yeah, that's cute.
But also, the sun helps as well. It's summer.
Yeah.
Your last job. So that's also a great thing.
For sure. So, yeah. How about you? Favourite job? F1.
Yeah, vascular, which was my last job for this exactly the same reason Suba's just said.
Fine. Right, next question for you. This can be a yes-no question, okay? Does medicine take over your life? I know what I'm going to say. Come on, yes or no? Don't think about it too much.
I'm going to say yes.
Yeah, I'm going to say yes.
Why did you say
but
yes?
Not in a bad way. I just think that it is the kind of job that is not... It's not like a job you leave behind. And if you are doing that, then I don't think you're making the best of the job. And I don't think it's in a bad way. I think that being a doctor kind of seeps into the nature of who you are.
Yeah.
And that's not a bad thing.
And I think teachers probably would say something very similar.
Exactly.
Because once you do these jobs, you're now exposed to, like, people.
Yeah.
And whenever you're exposed to people in such an intimate way, in a way that you can, like, really change or affect their lives, it's a privilege to be in that position. Yeah. And actually, you have skills that will be important, both inside your job and outside your job.
Yeah.
And also, like, I'd never thought it would happen to me, but literally I was on the plane to Nigeria, and they were like, hi, is there a doctor on board? And I'm like, sick, I'm on my way to Nigeria. Yeah. All us Nigerian kids have done medicine. But the plane was, like, virtually empty. There wasn't many people on it. And so no one said anything. So I was like, hi, uh-huh. I'm a doctor. And then they like, double looked at me because I had, like, my face was dead.
Yeah.
And, like, I had heels on. But then I went to help, and it was, like, a really nice thing. And thankfully, it was, like, quite an easy situation to deal with.
Yeah.
But there's... aspects of our jobs that just, like, take over who you are.
Yeah, they are just, they become part of your life. I think maybe almost, I know you said teacher, but I think maybe almost any career, like, your career does seep, like, if you're a business owner, like, it seeps into your life, like.
Yeah, it does.
You
it
know,
does.
And I don't think it's, takes over sounds mm-hmm. a bit, like, invade-y.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a case of, like, you're losing.
You're, like, creepy.
Yeah. It's not like you're losing yourself to your job. I think it's just that if it's a job, you know, you wanted to do this job, like, it does... become part of who you are, and it's not a bad thing.
Yeah, and I know in, like, our fifth episode when we talk to sit down with Muna, actually we talk about, like, the dangers of allowing it to completely take over in a negative way.
Yeah.
And
that consume you.
Yeah, exactly, because I think we've all had that moment where it has consumed us, and even when you talk about, like, the shift that you had to make, we've all made that mental shift in,
yeah,
actually, I need to live my life, I need to have my own identity, I need to see what I can forge out of my job,
yeah,
and the way it can, like, really change my life. And those decisions are important to make.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it will take over, but you have to make it your own.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you're doing it right, it will take over.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's fine.
Okay, your favourite part of F1?
Okay, so we did hardest part before. Favourite part... okay. In a really nerdy way, I think my favourite moment was, and I know it's kind of crazy, but seeing my first STEMI on the ward as a medical F1 on the nights was, but this was at a point where I was comfortable, I was confident-ish. I didn't feel like I wasn't overwhelmed by the moment. I just found it medically really, really amazing to see a STEMI, because I'd never seen a STEMI before as a med student. I'd never seen a real life STEMI. So I was like, oh my God, it's just like, just like the textbooks. I loved it. And it was just like, it was like an OSCE station come to life, the history, the examination, the prescribing, all that. It was, yeah, I think that was a nerdy moment of like my favourite moment on F1. I think otherwise, like, life favourite moments on F1, probably just like the friendships. I sound so corny, but
I was
going to
say the friendships as well.
Yeah, just like those times we spent at like our local bar. Just like,
do you call it a bar? It was like a dive pub, wasn't it?
I mean, it was a gym with a bar.
Oh, that place! Yeah, of course. We literally used to go to the gym just to go to the bar.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was so fun.
That was fun.
And I always used to like spend time at Bookie's house and like sleep over there. Yeah. I'd go and find myself in another house. I'd be eating there. I'd be like, Glory, do you want to drive to Costco or IKEA? Like we had such a good time because just there wasn't that much to do there.
No.
So
just life memories, really like chilling with everybody, the jokes, the bants, like just good times. And I think because it was special for us because we had moved to this like little town to work. And like you said, nothing else other than just the rest of us.
And I wouldn't have changed that for the world. No. I think it was so important.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ooh, last question, Subes.
Okay, I can't believe we made it. How do you survive night shifts?
Oh, and that's like a come around to the first question
that
you asked.
Yeah, that whole the like, 24-hour one, yeah, which is good.
How do you survive night shifts?
Yeah.
So, can I just make a disclaimer? I don't actually sleep that much, and I'm actually fine with only sleeping for 5 or so
hours.
She's
some kind of freak of nature.
So, yeah.
So I sleep the hours that you should be sleeping.
That's funny.
They get added on to me.
Oh, is that how it's worked? I see. So how do you survive nights? I think I've got better at surviving nights as an F2 than I was an F1. But basically, I make sure I have cooked myself, like, a proper dinner.
Yeah.
And I take that to work, and I'll use a microwave, and I'll make sure I actually take a break, regardless of what I'm doing.
So, no, start us from the beginning. So, like, say you've got a shift from 8 to 8.
Okay.
What, like, so your first one, do you sleep in the first morning, or do you just, like, take a nap before you come? What do you do?
So, my first shift, okay, so let's say it's a Monday, that I'm going to be working Monday nights.
Yeah.
So on Sunday, I would have done my day as normal and I'd gone to sleep that evening and woken
normal
up.
Normal time.
And just stayed in bed for as long as I can. For me, it's actually a little bit difficult because naturally I wake up about 6 or 7.
Yeah.
But like if I can, I'll try and stay in until about like 9, 10.
Yeah.
Or I'll stay up late that night and just sleep in as long as I can.
Yeah.
So kind of by midday, I'm a bit more active.
Okay.
So at that time, I would have like probably gone out to the shops and bought food for the week.
Yeah.
And I would have been cooking definitely or have gone to the gym or something. So I'd make sure that I've got food for that night and then I would go to sleep for a couple of hours
before
my night shift. Exactly. So maybe from the hours of like 2 till 5, I'd have gone to sleep. Or maybe from the hours of like 4 till whatever time, I'd have gone to sleep. And then I'd gone on my first night shift.
Okay.
I find the first night the hardest.
Yeah.
Because it's a night I haven't rested properly.
Yeah.
And also it's just kind of get yourself in the mindset of nights because it's a very different job.
Yeah.
So that's how I do my sleeping schedule. What about you with your sleeping schedule?
So similar. I try and stay up the night before and then sleep in as much as I can. But again, even for me, and I am like basically a sloth, but I still...
I agree.
Yeah, it's 100% true. a sloth is my spirit animal. But I still, also find myself up like... The longest I can sleep is probably like 11.
Yeah, it's good just to lie down and rest.
Yeah, you just lay there for a bit and then generally you'll be up and sort of 11, 12, I get up. I like to use it as a day just to run like my errands.
Yeah,
like,
it's such a good day for errands.
Because you've got like the daytime free. I try and take food in, but I'm not always the best with it. I do try and make something to take in, but this year I found myself actually more sticking to my regular, so I'll have dinner before I go to work.
Good.
I'll have like maybe a snack at work and then I come home and I eat breakfast and then sleep.
Yeah.
Whereas in F1, I used to like completely change my eating schedule. So I would have breakfast when I woke up. So before I went out my night shift, I'd have breakfast and I'd have like
cereal or something.
Well, like eggs or, more like a more hearty breakfast.
Would you? I'd have a full on dinner, mate.
Yeah, I used to be a mixed bag because it would depend. It would depend. Maybe maybe not the first night, because obviously I've been up, but the second night, because I would sleep in, I would then have like a breakfast before I went in.
Mm.
And then I'd have like a big meal when I... But then also, I would that would backfire because I'd get back home mm-hmm. in the morning and I wouldn't be up for eating a big dinner.
I see.
So then I wouldn't be eating much. That's what I found.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about what we would do after the night shift. So we've done the whole night shift.
Yeah.
Well, actually, during the night shift, was there any practices that you now have that you'd try and keep up?
Yeah, so I think I recognise in myself, I always get that slump, like that sort of 4 a.m. slump.
That low cortisol slump.
Yeah, and I at that point, I will have a coffee.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there is actually a really interesting article now that's been released in the BMJ about caffeinating on your night shift and how best to caffeinate.
Oh, interesting.
Which I've been meaning to read, actually. I've not read it.
Ooh, okay.
But I need to. We were talking about it on our A&E night shift.
Another time, definitely. Yeah.
But that might be one for you guys to read, your F1 starting on nights. And how to maximise your sleep and things like that, apparently the article covers.
Okay, cool.
But yeah, I tend to have like a sort of 4 a.m. coffee just to wake me up and keep me going for the last few hours.
Yeah, because you definitely do take a dip at 4 a.m. Yeah. It's like well-researched and for studied.
Sure. And I always take my water bottle around with me during my night shifts to make sure I'm hydrating myself.
I've lost so many water bottles that way and so many good coffee mugs. I literally spent £40 on a beautiful coffee mug. You know, the one I had like a couple of months back.
The marble one. Was it like, oh, goodness, no. it was beautiful.
It was beautiful. It was like a Japanese coffee mug, no spillage.
That one was nice.
And I lost it literally within a week in the hospital. The hospital will take stuff from you.
Yeah.
Just because you're running around, you're probably like going to an arrest call, then you'd have dropped it somewhere.
Leave it somewhere.
And then God knows where that somewhere is.
It's probably at the bottom of some notes trolley. Like.
One nurse told me that she saw a patient drinking from a cup and she was like, what? Who gave you that? And then the patient was like, oh, someone else gave it to me. And she was like, what the heck? So she just gave it to the patient. So like during the nights, I try and take a break. And I try and take a break like quite early on, because actually if you try and leave your break a bit too late, you probably won't get there.
No.
Yeah. And if possible, particularly my F1 year, you would tend to work with one other F1 on your medical night shifts. So we would try and go around the wards together, or we would try and split up the jobs like more equally and just keep in touch with each other. Because actually nights can be quite lonely.
Yeah.
So I always try and make a point of just figuring out at the beginning how we're going to separate and how we're going to do jobs together.
I think I would absolutely agree with you on that. I think one thing that I found hard about nights was the loneliness, actually.
Mm.
Because in the daytime, you're not seeing anybody because all your, you know, housemates or whoever is generally at work. And then maybe you get a few hours with them before, you know, when they come back from work and before you go out to work. And so, and then at work, like, you know, because it's the night shift, you're not actually seeing many people.
Yeah, it's really weird.
So that it can be hard. So I think it is nice to definitely, like, if you can with your team. And I think often, you know, the registrar centre try and coordinate this, which is really nice of them.
Yeah, they
to be like, okay, at midnight or 1 o'clock, we're all going to get together for a team break. And it's just nice to get together and get to know your, like, you get to know different people, colleagues, you just hang out, which is nice.
And so let's say we've now finished the night and then you're going home. Do you have anything that you do?
So on the first night, obviously, I think I'm lucky in that I sleep really easily and I can sleep with the sunlight, so it doesn't bother me. I know quite a few people it does affect them. So in that case, I think it is important to make sure you're getting maybe like a good sleep mask or whatever you need to do to try and white noise machines, whatever you need to do, like maintain your sleep hygiene.
And I know a lot of people who even drive home after their shift, they will like use sunglasses as well on their way home just to kind of like get themselves in the mood to sleep.
Yeah, because I found it really easy to just get home, conk out. And I generally get home and sleep rather than stay up.
Mm-hmm.
So I get home and sleep and then I'll wake up maybe like a few hours before my shift. So I'll maybe wake up at like 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
Have a few hours before I go in, which I quite like.
Yeah, I do it either one of two ways. I either go straight to sleep. I go straight to sleep when I go home.
Yeah.
Actually, I always eat before when as soon as I go home. But I would either go straight to sleep after I've gone home, or I will stay up till about 12, 1 o'clock and then go to sleep then. And usually if I'm staying up to that time, it's probably because I've gone to like a yoga class.
You've done something, yeah.
Or a gym class, something quite like light I will do. And then I'll go to sleep. But I know that doesn't really work for many people.
Yeah. I mean, I like to wake up a bit earlier so that I can just have some time with whoever's come home.
Yeah, exactly.
Just so I can see some human beings.
No, definitely. It gets super duper lonely.
Yeah.
But I think that kind of wraps up the questions that we had to ask.
Yeah.
Should we go through the little letters/notes we had for each other?
Yes. So do you want to start yours off?
Yeah, so I thought, let's do a little Dear Diary, but like a quick note on what we would now tell ourselves.
Yeah.
So I will quickly skip through mine, yeah?
Okay.
So I wrote, Dearest Emily, ask your seniors for help early on and ask for clarification during the ward round. Your job will be easier and less stressful the more you are open about the gaps in your knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Also, give the same energy to exception reporting and updating your portfolio / doing competencies as you would do staying late at work.
Tell him, Amelie.
Mm-hmm. And you go.
Okay. So, you've touched on some of the things that I wanted to say.
Give me yours.
Okay, so I've said to myself, read up more on cases that you see, which I think I always think to myself. Mm. And I do more now. Remember, you are in a training job. You should be learning. If you're not being taught, think about bringing it up with your consultant.
Because
I think back to some times where I could have learnt more and I should have asked for it if it's not being given. Know what your job is and what's expected of you. Don't let anyone take advantage of you.
Mm.
You can't be in two places at once. Ask for help and utilise your colleagues. And the last thing is, always do the best job you can. If something crosses your mind, you should probably do it or just consider why it crossed your mind.
Good, good. I think that was really nice to end on.
Yeah, it was an interesting episode, isn't it?
It was. And I think we'll probably just come in under an hour on this episode.
Yeah.
So we could go on for
ages.
And
I feel like that easily could have been like a 3-hour episode.
So thank you for listening, everyone. It was a joy to do that episode and thank you for contributing. It's really helpful to us. Please continue to give us feedback and continue to ask questions. If you have any dilemmas or anything, just message us.
Yeah.
And you know what to do.
Like, comment, subscribe, follow our Instagram, follow our Facebook, and maybe a soon-to-be Twitter, but that's in the pipeline.
Exactly. So, thank you for listening.
Thank you, and good
luck. As always, 5-star review, please. Yeah. And all the best in F1. I think you'd have started by the time we release this episode.
Yeah.
And
or at least they'll be in their induction week. But good luck to all the F1s. Hope you can take on all our nuggets of information and just enjoy.
Enjoy, ask questions, have a great year.
Yeah.
Bye, guys.
Bye, guys.
Today's episode was recorded at Mare Street Market.
Catch us over on www.afterthelettersmarket.com or /afterthelettersmarket on every social media network.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.